Vodka O'Clock.
Good evening, everyone. It's Amber Love of Vodka O'Clock Podcast and AmberUnmasked.com. And today, my very special guest is Zach Krusey, who is running a special Kickstarter campaign. We're going to get into all of the details about that, but first, let me just remind you, we're an explicit website and podcast, so if you're easily offended or under 18, you probably should not be a follower of mine. Let's just say that. Zach, welcome. Welcome to the Vodka O'Clock.
Hi, thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
So instead of vodka, since we're going to be talking about the Appleseed Art and Comics Convention, I'm drinking apple cider, hard cider. I picked up a couple new ones. So the first one I'm going to try is the Blackberry Pear Cider from Fox Barrel.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds whimsical.
Yeah, it does. It sounds, woodsy. Like, yeah. You know, like you expect cute little things to be running around while you're drinking it. It's the Snow White effect. And then if it sucks, I brought up a woodchuck to have next to me just to wash it down if I don't like it.
It's always good to have a backup like that.
Yeah, well, people kept recommending this Angry Orchard. So mm-hmm. I picked up two of those, and I had one of them yesterday, and it was an extra dry, and I didn't like it. Not my thing.
I haven't had the extra dry?
Yeah.
But I usually like them. The other ciders I've had are pretty good.
So, let's see. This is interesting. Blackberry pear. Getting a lot of the blackberry.
Good, interesting, or interesting?
Well, no, it's good. But definitely good. These things are nice because they're sort of just like having a cold soda. You know? Or yeah. a pop, as you guys say out there in Fort Wayne.
Yeah, I don't know why we call it pop. I don't know what pop has to do with anything, but
I don't know. It used to be called soda pop, like just as one word.
You know what's absurd is I've never put that together. It's just like, yeah, it's just pop. Anyway.
Yeah. Let's get into this Kickstarter campaign of yours. It's very easy to search in, if you just go to, Kickstarter.com and you type in Appleseed, it's the first one that comes up of those names. And this is for your show that will be in next year in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And you've been doing this show for several years because I went to your show before it was even called Appleseed,
mm-hmm.
when it was Summit City.
Right.
So I've just kind of been following along every single year, hoping that there was some way I could make the travel costs to get back out there. But it's grown and it's gotten this amazing reputation of being such a comics-friendly and creator-friendly show. So
yeah, thank you for that. I worked really hard for that. You and I have known each other for a long time, but when I started doing the show, that was the idea. It was to do a community show that is comics-focused, and just as importantly as being comics-focused is that it's creator-focused. I make comics occasionally, not as much as I used to, I guess, anymore. But,
right.
But it's tough being on the other side of the table, and it can be extra tough when you go to a show where, honestly, you're not the focus, where, some aging professional wrestler is, or Adam West or something like that, and I love the 60s Batman show, and I like Adam West, and I like, meeting those B-list celebrities from the movies that I grew up watching and the TV shows, but, to me, that's not the reason I go to comic shows. I go to comic shows because I want to meet the people that are making the books that I read every week, and if it's not, or web comics or whatever the case may be. And I think that's the thing to focus on. I think if you want to have a good show, a legit show that actually draws people, not just to the show to get money through the door, but to comics as a medium, I think we as convention organizers have to put the creators first and make them front and center. Because those personal relationships that people build at shows with creators are what keeps them coming back, I think.
So what's the average attendee count like for your show? Because previously it's been one day. So up to this point, what have you built up to?
We've been running, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we've been running for the past, previous 4 years, that is, anywhere, we started out about 1,200 to 1,500, and we've run up to pretty close to 2,000. So, and that's for one day. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with those numbers. I mean, those, for, especially for a city that's, you know, only 300,000 people and, you know, a young show, I'm pretty pleased with that, but I think we can do better. And, you know, that's part of the reason that, I'm using the Kickstarter is to be able to do better. So, you know, it has been growing, pretty steadily, over the past 4 years. And, you know, it's been really rewarding and exciting to watch grow. I mean, I think that's the thing that I get the biggest kick out of is to see people that are coming back to the show year after year and find it and not just coming back because out of like rote memorization or something, you know, but because they're actually finding new things and getting something out of the experience.
Right. And, it's at first, I really didn't get the chance to see Fort Wayne at all, but that particular neighborhood was really kind of quaint. Like when we went out afterwards, first of all, I think we walked, the only places that we had to be, like I stayed at a bed and breakfast and, you know, we were able to walk to the convention center and then, you know, walk to any of the bars or whatever that we went to afterwards. It was just one of the things where I think the only place we drove to was, I think your comic shop.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. When the show was associated with DCBS. Yeah.
Right.
That was really the only place you had to drive to. I mean, that's the reason that I do it downtown because there's plenty to do down there, you know, as far as convention stuff goes. The only thing you really have to drive to is just to go to any of the comic shops or movie theaters in the area. If you want to walk, you can walk to most of the great bars that are downtown and all the food and all that kind of stuff that's right there. And actually, since you've been here, it's built up even more because, well, maybe not. The baseball stadium was there that first year, but
I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it definitely was. But the baseball stadium is downtown right across from, convention center, and there's a new strip center in there with restaurants and shops and that sort of thing. So
the convention center, though, I did want to specifically bring up because I know you mentioned it in the I think in the video for on the Kickstarter page. You mentioned some, you know, about how nice that particular convention center is, and that was literally probably the nicest convention center I've ever been in, because that one wall is just this amazingly tall cathedral-like floor-to-ceiling windows. So the main hallway that people are going to be walking down is beautifully lit. So I know it's one of those things where a small show doesn't really get that many cosplayers to come out and take pictures, but it really is like a fabulous little wing just for photos of any kind. And then inside where the tables are, it was really bright. It was still really bright. So it's just one of those things where I've been in, like, I remember the old, like, Big Apple show out in New York. It was like being in the bottom of a submarine. It was like everything was just dark and dismal and gray and just like, it was just not inviting. And
right.
Yet this convention hall that you've got is beautiful. It's so beautiful and clean. That just makes a really good impression.
Yeah, yeah. I can't believe, like, how lucky we are to have that place down there. And I think a lot of people or at least that are coming in from out of town, share your experience. They come in like, oh, I can't believe how nice this is. And, yeah, and, you know, and the thing is I think that I mentioned this in the Kickstarter video too. I mean, they do so many just little things there for the show that make it, they just add up to make it that much more pleasant. You know, the things like you're saying, but even just teensy tiny little things like leaving trash cans around for people to throw stuff in and for creators to use. I mean, I know you've done lots of shows. I mean, to get a trash can or to get to the end of a day or the end of a show and not have to haul away like a giant, like, armful of garbage and wadded up chip bags and, you know, soda cups. I mean, that's kind of nice.
And to not have to take 45 minutes to an hour to walk across the show floor.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I'm such a big fan of medium-sized shows. I really, it's my favorite thing to do, shows like yours, because I don't want to have to, just that notion of, well, if I want to make it to a panel, I have to leave the artist alley an hour ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. So, and basically, that's what the inside of your show is like. It's like the biggest artist alley possible.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's like 95% artist alley. I want retailers there, and I want people to dig through back issues and stuff. And we have some really great ones that come year after year. But, you know, it's like I said before, I think the greatest experience is finding that back issue but also meeting the person that drew it. That's again, you know, why I limit the number of vendors that I even allow at this show. It's not that we couldn't handle more, but I don't want those guys those men and women that are working so hard to lose any opportunities to be able to reach out to new fans, you know?
Right, absolutely. And there's sort of like a steady, stable core group of people that make the show every year. And then there's, because it's growing, even the artists attending, you get some new blood each time. So that's great. But I mean, I know like Hilary Barda is always there, and Steve Bryant, and Dave Wachter. So, these are like people that you want to meet, and you get to spend 10 minutes talking to while they're, you know, they might not be able to work on your commission right as you're standing there. A lot of them have to have a list, but I agree with you. I love, the idea that you're not standing in some sort of line for a really long time just to get up to a table to talk to somebody and shake their hand for a second.
Right.
You know, this is just such a more intimate approach, and if those people are going to be at the big shows and they're going to be in really cramped aisles, then, you know, sort of make that choice where, well, if I can be at a show where everybody's happy and everybody's more comfortable and there's no line, then to me it's sort of like a no-brainer. I'm like, I would skip the big show.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's really, to me, it's so much about that experience, you know, and you don't have to, you know, be hovering over someone's table to get to know them or to develop some sort of relationship, if not with them, then with their work. You know, you can be there, like you said, for 10 minutes and talk to somebody flipping through, you know, a portfolio or whatever, and you can really, really get a good handle on not just that person, but their work. And, you know, if you're someone who comes out and is relatively unfamiliar with comics or is looking for something new, it's a really great opportunity to, you know, find that new thing, meet that new person, you know, that thing, that great thing to glom onto. And you know, the other side of that too is it's a great opportunity for creators to push and, you know, build that fan base that's going to be loyal to them for a long time.
Do you know who's already planning on attending?
Yeah, the guest list is gradually growing. You know, we're still 10 months out, so
sure.
So the list is, you know, on its way. But this year we have Dave, of course, will be back. Hilary will be back. I'm anticipating that we're going to have at least three or four of the Four Star Studios guys, like Mike Norton and Josh Emmons and Sean Dove. And hopefully a few others will come along with them. But this year, so far, one of our big guest announcements this year is we have Peter Bagg coming to the show. And I love Peter Bagg. It's been sort of ever since when I started the show, it's been kind of a dream of mine to get Peter here because I love Hate and the Bradleys and, you know, the things that he did for Neat stuff. I think Peter's just one of the best working cartoonists out there. And, so I'm really excited for Peter to be here. And, but Ed Piskor will be here this year, who did, just got an Eisner for WYSIWYG. And, we'll also have, Tom Scholey, and just several others. So we've got a list right now of about 30 or so, and you can find that on the Appleseed website. But by the time the show gets here, it'll reach about, I cap the show at about 100 to 125 creators. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, because I want people to be able to focus and spend time with these guys, that's why I cap it. You know, we could get more, we could squeeze more creators in, but, you know, at a certain point, you saturate the floor, and it makes it harder for the fan to really, find that new person if they're so overwhelmed by trying to see and touch and smell everything.
Okay. So, do you set up a wait list?
Yeah, basically what it is, for those that don't know, because I want to make this as a creator-friendly show as possible, I offer all of my artist alley tables for free. So, basically what we do is we have a jury system, so folks can submit, and then it's, you know, whatever work that they submit is reviewed by the jury, and we try to get back to people as quickly as we can, just sometimes we get a little bit more flooded than others, but we try to get back to folks as quickly as we can, and then in the event that someone is not approved immediately for a table, that's not really a reflection on their work, it's usually a reflection on, you know, the amount of space that we have left. So we move those folks to a waiting list, and then as space becomes available, or if space becomes available, then we reach out to those people and say, hey, this spot opened up. If you're still interested, we'd like to have you, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. And let's see. The Kickstarter goal is it's pretty modest. You have $8,000 goal.
Right.
And is this your first time taking a stab at Kickstarter?
Yeah. This is the first time I've done anything with Kickstarter. I've supported several Kickstarter campaigns, either myself or through the show. So I'm not unfamiliar with it, but I decided to use Kickstarter this year because the show is going to go on in 2014, but really what I want to be able to do is expand the show from 1 to 2 days. That's the biggest thing that the Kickstarter is going to help us do. But it's also going to really help us a lot in attracting new guests like Peter Bagg and others. So it helps out a great deal with that. And it also is going to help us set up additional community events here in the city to bring more people into the show and get them more excited about comics in general. So, for example, I have a couple of speakers that are lined up to come to local universities here in the city. So our Kickstarter funds will help supplement that and make sure that we can get even more here. We'll also be running a film festival, or sort of a micro film festival in March of next year. So the Kickstarter will help us with that. And it's also really just going to help us to market the show to people that live outside of the area. I think we've been really effective and marketing the show to people that live, you know, in Northeast Indiana, in Ohio, and, you know, really throughout most of Indiana. But I would like to expand our reach a little bit deeper into Michigan, into the Chicago area, and deeper into Ohio and places further away. And again, you know, the reason behind that is not just to get people through the door. Of course, you always want people through the door, but the idea is just to get people out there just to celebrate comics for comics' sake. Don't come because, like, oh man, this is the time I'm going to get Bruce Campbell to sign my chainsaw. You know, come because.
Right, that's not going to be the thing.
No, it's not. I mean, this is get out here and, you know, get Peter Bagg to do a commission for you. This is
right.
Get out here and meet Dave Wachter and have him, you know, sign your sheriff's badge for, you know, from Guns of Shadow Valley, something like that. It's an entirely different experience than what you find at a lot of larger shows. So, and like I said, Kickstarter helps do that.
Right. So the community outreach was sort of like this brand new component that I hadn't ever noticed any other Comic-Con attempting to do before, except for maybe things like Trickster, I think, maybe does like a drink and draw or something. But it's very more inclusive as to during the times and dates of the con. Right. So you're doing things specifically like year round and associating it with Appleseed.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. So it, and I guess those are other things I forgot to mention too. I mean, we do bi-weekly drink and draws year round that invite anyone in the area that wants to come out and hang out and have a few beers and make comics or just spend time with people who have similar interests. But yeah, we do that, and this year, actually coming up at the end of the month, we have a festival in town called Taste of the Arts, so Appleseed will be down there, we'll be doing comic stuff, and reaching out to people in that way, too. I mean, the thing to me is, and I really believe this with all my heart, is that people will read comics. People that don't read comics now will read comics. The trouble is that for many of them, they've set up this barrier where they think that comics are only superheroes. And, you know, I love superheroes as much as anybody. I'm not putting that down. But for many people that, if we're being honest, for many people that's a barrier. And by reaching out to the community in this way, we can draw those people in and say, hey, remember how much you really liked Ghost World, remember how much you really liked American Splendor, remember how much you really liked History of Violence or something else? Those are all comics. Why don't you come over here and let us show you some things? And, you know, the past couple of years we've tried to do that on a smaller scale, and I feel like it's really worked. I would say, just guesstimating, I would say about 25 to 35% of the people that come through the door at Appleseed or at the previous show, Summit City, I'd say about 35% of them either have a very limited knowledge about comics or have never read them at all. And the fact that they come out to even see what's here is very encouraging to me. And I think that we can draw more people like that out and get them more interested and more invested in the medium that, you know, you and I and so many other people love so much.
Yeah, I think it's always an interesting debate because things like the video game market is so huge and really basically a primary component of why comics are surviving at all. Is not because of the comics. It's the gaming and the blockbuster movies. Even the bad movies do a fair share of keeping people's interest. And a lot of the stuff that's not superhero, like when you see superheroes, you do think of comics, but the stuff that's not superhero, like The Losers, you know, and you mentioned Two Guns and stuff like that, The Walking Dead. People are very addicted to The Walking Dead show that didn't know it was a comic. It's just always an interesting debate about what makes somebody, you know, have the legitimate right to be a fan of something. And people like you are just so much more open-minded about it and just like, hey, if you like that, come check out this. instead of putting up this blockade saying, oh, you just don't know what you're talking about, and more like excluding them.
Right, yeah. You always attract more flies with honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I think you're exactly right about, you know, so much of, you know, what we understand is comics being supported by video games and film and, you know, cartoons and licensing deals. And that's absolutely true. You know, my perspective on that is, while that's true, I just feel like we, as the community that cares about this so much, can do something to supplement what those bigger guys are doing. And we can do that just, you know, by being kind to people and saying, I bet you would like this. Why don't you try it? And if they don't like it, then, you know, God bless them. That's fine. You don't have to like everything. You know, I certainly don't. But, you know, if we can at least get people to try it.
Right. And that's, you know, once in a while, we get really lucky when something that was not a big brand franchise or whatever, you know, gets to take off or gets a TV deal, like The Sixth Gun. You know, I mean, right. That was, you know, little book from Oni Press, and you know, just two regular guys that wanted to make comics. And, you know, next thing you know, NBC is, I mean, they put in a couple years of time. It's not like it came out of nowhere. But, you know, it's really cool. And all of a sudden you're on CBR and you're seeing these announcements about, you know, stuff's not even optioned. Stuff is like beyond, it's like past the point of option. They're casting, it's in the works, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, and that's super exciting to me. And the thing is where you're seeing so many of those come from, I mean, outside of the realm of the Marvel and DC universes, or excuse me, where you're seeing most of them come from is from outside of the, you know, the realm of the Marvel and DC universe. And that's really exciting too. That's super exciting. Because that means that tells me that the demand for these stories is there. It makes my job at least a little bit easier in saying, you already like this. Remember? you spent an entire season watching this, DVRing this. You've already told me that you like it. Now let's take it the next step further. That's a really exciting thing to me.
Wilson, I mean, we're having a really cool discussion about sort of like, you know, transmedia of comics and the properties and everything. So what sort of things get discussed in your discussion panels?
We do lots of different stuff. In the past, we've run a lot of workshops, you know, making comics workshops. We've actually even run cosplaying workshops as well. At least this year we did. But a lot of times what we've done is we've set guys up to talk about really just to speak frankly about what they're doing in the industry and some of the challenges that are out there for, you know, and especially for indie comics creators. While I want to have, you know, plenty of mainstream guests at the show, I mean, the bulk of our guests are indie comics guys. So, you know, it's an opportunity to really talk about the challenges and the rewards that are available in doing it. We also spend, I think almost every year we've had a panel talking about digital comics, either web comics or just regular digital, you know, like you get through Comixology or someplace like that, and the potential impact that will have on not really the market so much, but just the industry and what creators are doing to adjust for it. We also usually have at least one or two panel discussions that are creator spotlights. So we've done creator spotlights with Hillary, who's just has these amazing stories. But we've also done them with Dennis Cowan and a few others. So, I think that's a lot of fun for fans to experience. Again, because, you know, when I go to panels, when I go to panels at bigger shows, I'm not going there thinking, man, I just can't wait to see the lineup for the next big thing. I want to hear the actual thoughts and ideas and stories from these men and women. You know, I can get the marketing stuff from CBR or Newsarama or Bleeding Cool or wherever.
Right, so it's more than a commercial. It's actually informative.
yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you said it much more succinctly than I possibly could have. But yeah, it's they're all intended to be either informative or educational, as opposed to an advertisement. Because I just that's more interesting, and that's what keeps people sticking around. It's not some flash in the pan thing like, oh, in 6 months we're going to be publishing this book. Well, that's terrific, but what am I going to be? Why will I care after 6 months? And I think when you have those educational or informative panels, those give you the things to understand and to think about, excuse me, for the next, you know, not just 6 months, but 12 months or 18 or however many years, as you sort of follow along with, you know, whatever books it is that you're reading.
So the Kickstarter campaign is running through August pretty much. So, when people contribute to that, it, you know, it helps build things like, you know, get these other creators there, whether they're speaking or, you know, they're likely having tables for you to meet them as well. Like you said, there's the community involvement. So what sort of rewards are in the campaign?
Lots, actually.
Yeah, there are lots. I mean, I see, like, they have a great big long list of people that are helping out.
Yeah, I've been really, really fortunate with some of the creators that have been willing to help out and volunteered to help out. So we've got most of the rewards are sketches or commissions from artists that will be attending the show, which is really cool that they're donating, you know, part of their time and their labors to the show. That means a lot to me personally. But a lot of them are sketches and commissions that folks can pick up and at the show and meet these guys. But we also have T-shirts for the show, sticker packs, and also you know, you can buy tickets to the show as well. But there's also a lot of sponsorship and advertising options. So if there are folks out there that either want to be one of the premier sponsors for the show, there's an option for that. There's options to buy vendor booths. There's options to buy ads in the program, or even ads on the website and that sort of thing. So there's plenty of ways to really participate with the Kickstarter and with the convention. You don't have to just be a fan. You can be someone who's also trying to reach out to fans. And I feel like diversifying it in that way allows the Kickstarter to reach all sorts of different people and draw support from different facets of the community.
I'm even noticing that you have a VIP package.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I actually forgot about those. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Good job.
Hey, all right.
That's great. That's great.
I can read.
That's great podcasting, Amber. Redirect the guest when he forgets about his own stuff. I set up a few VIP packages where I will fly people in from anywhere around the country or put them up in hotels while they're here at the show. And, you know, I set those up, not that I think that there are going to be lots of people saying, oh, man, I really want to fly in from Portland, Oregon. I mean, I hope there are. But I set those up because I want to let people know that, A, I'm willing to do this, and I'm really, really happy to do it, but B, I want to bring people here to let them experience the show and the community in this way, and let them know that there is an opportunity out there for them to not just have to show up at some, you know, really sweaty, damp, you know, convention hall somewhere. They can come here and they can relax and spend time with friends or in the community and with people that really, really care about comics, and the people that make them. So, yeah, I mean, you know, do I really anticipate that I'm going to move like 20 of those? No, but I want people to know that the option's there, and I hope that people take advantage of that because I want them to come. The whole thing for me with the show, and I know I'm sort of running off on a tangent with this, but the whole thing for me with the show, and I've said this from day one, is that I want people to come to Appleseed and just have at least 1/100th or 1,000th, even 1,000th of the excitement that I have and the passion that I have for comics and in the comics community. And if there's anything that I can do to share that with people so they can come out and see this and just spend a little time with this and go home a happier, wiser, more thoughtful person or just someone that has found something new, found a new way to enjoy the short amount of time that we have on Earth. I mean, that's really what I want to do with this. And, that's really what drives everything that I do with this show. So if that means that I got to fly somebody out from the West Coast, then I will do it. If that means I got to put somebody up in a hotel for a couple of nights, then I will do it. Because it's really that important to me.
I've never seen really anything else offer that to attendees. I've seen that offered to creators, like, you know, hey, with this amount of money, you know, a creator who's maybe launching a new book will say, you know, for $1,000, I will fly to, you know, your comic shop or something like that. So I've never actually seen what, you know, this other variation of that, which is to get people to the show.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and like I said, it's, you know, it's really just to spread the love and try to give people a little bit of what of the happiness and the joy that I feel for comics. So
Well, let me ask you this. Do you get to go to other shows at all?
Yeah, I do, actually. Not as often as I used to. But that's really only because in recent years, and you know this, I think, but you know, I started teaching and I'm going to grad school as well, so that puts a pretty big cramp on my schedule. And but no, I go to as many shows as I can, and I've been going to shows for a long time. So yeah, no, I've been at this for a while. At least this is 2013, so I've been attending cons regularly for at least 13 years. So you know, this isn't, you know, my first rodeo. I've attended them from, you know, from the East Coast to the West Coast, and you know, points in between. And you know, every show is different, and every show offers a different experience for fans. And when I was putting together Appleseed, really what I borrowed a lot from were the experiences that I always thought were the best. And the two best convention experiences I think I've ever had were at the CGS Super Show and at Windy City Comic Con that the Around Comics guys put together.
Right.
Those two shows, by far and away, were the best convention experiences I've ever had, because they were shows that had heart, you know? People came, and they weren't just there because it was something to go or it was the big place to be. They were there because they really cared about it. And that really struck me. I mean, that really never left me. And because of those two shows and some other smaller successes that I had here in the city with other events, that's what really made me want to do at Summit City and now Appleseed.
Yeah, I definitely think that I never got to go to Windy City, but I did hear really good things about that. And obviously, I don't think I've ever missed a super show.
Yeah.
But it is sort of like you don't really have that anxiety, like I said, that stress level of, you know, oh my God, if it, you know, for, just. It's really hardcore, like scheduling out your day. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I know that I'm going to be standing in this line, you know, from this time to this time, and I want to get to that panel, so I need to get in line an hour ahead of time. Like some of the craziness. I think I had to. Usually, if I have to wait more than a half an hour in a line, I bail.
Right.
And that's why, you know, like New York, it's, you know, it's like, well, I'm really interested in knowing what this person has to say, but. I know in, you know, 5 minutes, as soon as those doors get open, people will be tweeting it, and it'll be up on, you know, on all of the websites anyway. I don't need to sit 400 rows back to see the person on a blurry movie projector screen. I can go do something else. As you can see, I don't like waiting in lines.
No, obviously not. This is a real problem.
I'm really, really fortunate because out here, our DMV is actually really wonderful. You can, I don't think I've ever been more than 20 minutes inside there.
Dang, I hate you.
I know. Well, that was why for my brief time living in Pennsylvania, I was really scared because it was going to be the time when I was going to have to like switch my stuff over. And I didn't understand like that they don't do things all in the same building. You have to go do things in like different places.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we just have DMV. You go. The only thing I have to do differently is actually physically take the car to inspection. And that I can set up by appointment on a Saturday. So, and it's like 5 minutes away. It's like, so I'm really spoiled about, you know, usually the worst case scenarios of waiting in lines. Like, I don't go to San Diego Comic-Con. I you know, when I get to New York, I hang out in Artist Alley. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can grate on you, right? Like, you're just like, I have to wait for this. Now I have to wait for this. You don't want to spend your whole life waiting for things. You want to actually do things.
Yeah,
right?
I want to do something. It's, yeah. You know, it's your time and your effort. And, you know, your money,
mm-hmm.
to go to someplace. And so it's really important to me that there are shows like, you know, like yours and CGS out there. And even if they do them just like, you know, one time, like, hey, let's this city needs something, we need to all get together, and there's a buzz, and you do it once, that's great. And then maybe the next year you do it in a different city or something like that. They do that with writers' conventions. They, right. They bounce them around, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of academic conferences and that sort of thing do that as well. So, but you know, I mean, there's some benefit in that, doing that too, because you're not just building one community, you're building hopefully multiple communities. So.
Right. So let's see. Have you updated your nifty little comic at all? Because I was really digging it.
And for Mystery Solved?
Mystery Solved, yes. I couldn't remember. Yeah. I was like, Mysterious, what the hell is it called?
I have been, and then for like the past like 5 or 6 weeks, I had to put it on hiatus. Not that it's going to keep going and it's not going away or anything like that, but, you know, as I sort of hinted at before, school and just really caught up with me, and then trying to balance that with the Kickstarter, I just lost any personal time that I may have had. Not that folks are necessarily worried about like my psychological health, but
we just like artists to go crazy.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly how people feel, right? But I'm just saying, I'm not. This isn't like, oh, woe is me. But no, this summer for my graduate school stuff, I'm taking three grad classes, and they're 16-week classes. Normally, but since it's in the summertime, they're taking 16-week classes and mushing them into 6 weeks. So I have all of this work to do for those. And then, you know, like I said, on top of that, getting ready for and balancing the Kickstarter, and something had to give. So
that is understandable.
So, yeah, I had to take a little bit of a break. But summer session is finishing up this week. So after this week, by the time this episode releases, I should be back on schedule. Releasing a new strip every week.
Okay, so let's tell the listeners, if they've never heard of Mystery Solved, what sort of goodness it is.
Mystery Solved is the webcomic of skepticism and adventure. If anyone out there ever watched Rocky and Bullwinkle or Dudley Do-Right, and they remember the character Commander McBragg, it's like that, except imagine McBragg investigating ghosts and goblins and psychics and Bigfoot and that sort of thing. And it's an adventure strip, and each adventure is the colonel investigating a different mystery, and sort of either debunking it or confirming it or whatever the case may be. And it's a lot of fun. I really like writing it a lot. It's certainly an evangelistic comic because I am a skeptic and I like science and reason and that sort of thing. But for as much as I like that stuff, that doesn't mean that there's not jokes to be had, and that you can't laugh at that sort of thing. So I try to.
It's sort of like a higher brow Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really what I'm going for there. You know, it when it does update, when I'm not freaking out and on the verge of a meltdown, it updates every Thursday, and if folks don't read it online, they can also read it every 2 months in Skeptical Inquirer, which is the journal that is put out by the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, and it can be found in bookstores everywhere.
That's pretty nifty. I didn't realize you were syndicated.
I am syndicated. It's very exciting. So, and to be syndicated by the journal that was founded by one of my heroes, Carl Sagan, kind of means a lot to me. So,
that's very awesome.
Yeah.
So have you, obviously when there's really any kind of creative person, we usually have these like lists or files of things just like, oh, maybe I'll get to this idea later, or this isn't the time, or just, you know, do you have like a bucket of ideas that you keep for the future, or do you just really like staying focused on one thing at a time?
It's a little of column A, a little of column B. I'm always thinking about new and different things. It's just a matter of finding the time to get them done. So what I do is I go out and I buy those cheap notebooks, composition notebooks, you know, like the notebooks that they found in John Doe's apartment in Seven.
The black marbled thing?
Yeah.
That's what I use.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So I just fill those things up with ideas and rough outlines for scripts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that and Google Drive are like the things that keep me going.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. I use that as well. I just sort of keep things on file, and as I can get to them, I do. I have another project that's in the works right now with Vince B of 11 O'Clock Comics fame.
Oh, I love Vince.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think I ever agree with him, but I love him.
That's okay. He's very cuddly. Vince and I have a project that we're working on together that it's going to be a while before anything actually releases because of how we're putting it together. But we're hoping to have something out for that within the next year, maybe a little more than a year. I'm really excited for folks to see that as well. Without giving too much away about it, it was actually a pitch that I, or an idea that I put together for a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic when Mirage was still around. And Mirage folded. I was like, well, I guess I'm never going to pitch this. But now
IDW has the turtles.
That's true. That's definitely true. But what I decided to do instead was, I reworked it into this other thing that Vince and I are doing together, and it involves aliens and dinosaurs and cavemen and all sorts of adventure and just some dark and scary stuff and some fun and wacky monster stuff too. I'm really excited for people to see this when it comes out. It's going to be great.
Well, that's cool. I'm excited for it. But now I have to ask you about the turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Are you upset that Michael Bay has like reworked them so that they're aliens now?
Oh, they don't act. That doesn't actually exist to me. So I don't.
What you're talking about?
Yep. It's like the fourth Indiana Jones movie. It didn't happen. So, yeah. I mean, sometimes I get upset about those things and they bother me. But you know, at the end of the day,
they're just not going to get your money, and that's it.
Yeah, they're not going to get my money, and that's it. And I still have, you know, all my old Eastman and Laird stuff, and, you know, the later stuff when it was just Peter Laird doing, you know, working on it or owning it at Mirage. I have all that, and that means more to me than any damage that could be caused by some goofball in a suit. So thank God for that. Again, another reason to get people to come out and actually read the source material, right?
Right.
When it gets trashed later, they can say, oh, but this movie was terrible, but I remember there's this really great story in these books.
Yeah.
And those never go away.
Catwoman.
Yes. Another great example.
And, you know, and yet it's one of those things, you know, talking about just the whole convention scene and everything. For as bad as Catwoman was, so many people wear that freaking costume, usually around Halloween, because it's a mass-produced piece, but so many people wear that costume.
Yeah, I know.
Y'all say it was a terrible movie, but...
I would be willing to guess, this is just a guess, I would guess that better than 80% of the people that are wearing that costume didn't see that movie.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I'm not doubting it.
They're just they know the character. They know who she is, and that's
And that's okay. And I'm not. Yeah, when I say that, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I'm just saying, like, it's just a hunch.
It's absolutely like if you know, I don't know. I guess if I were to dress up like I don't know, a French maid, you know, I can't say as I've ever been French or you know.
Or a maid.
Or a right? maid.
Yep. So. But that's okay, right?
Right. So it's part of the fantasy.
It is. Just let people enjoy it in their own way and say, okay.
I just think it's funny that it's like the most maligned comic book film of all time.
Yeah. No, I definitely see what you're, it's the level of irony, like, is painful.
Yeah.
But,
and it's like the most popular, like, mass produced female costume out there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it helps that it's, I mean, just being frank about it, for it being so mass produced, I'm sure it helps that it's so revealing.
Yeah.
Of so.
Of course it is. With the cosplay though at the show, do you have enough to do contests or what do you do?
Yeah. Well, this year it was a little bit different. We had a guy. The city wanted to participate more in the show this year than they had in the past, and the Downtown Improvement District brought in this guy who does a lot of living statue stuff. But, they had him put on a workshop there, and it was kind of cool because it wasn't just, this is how you stand really still. It was, here's how you develop a costume and a character to go with the costume and that sort of thing. And a lot of people came down actually just for that. So that was really cool. But a lot of what we've done in the past is, adult cosplayers haven't been as frequent as they are at other shows, although this year was, there's a big uptick. In it. So in the past, the costume contests and things that we've done have been for kids, because we not just because it's really cute when the kids come out in their costumes, whether
it's
know, mom
fabulous
and dad.
When kids are dressed up.
It
just adds like plus 20 charisma to children when they are dressed up.
Oh yeah, well it does that, but it changes or it can manipulate the atmosphere of the show, because people see kids who are excited. Adults see kids who are excited about the same things that made those adults excited when they were kids. And it allows the kids to make a connection, and I think that's a really, really awesome thing. So so we always have a kids costume contest. And I think next year, I'm looking to do an adult costume contest.
And by we'll adult see. Costume contest, we don't mean,
I don't, yeah,
like
I don't mean
triple X costume.
No, I mean adults dressed in costume. Yes. So, but yeah, because this year we had a lot more adult cosplayers than I think we had more adult cosplayers this year than I had at the previous 3 years combined.
This is pretty, spectacular.
It's really good. I mean, that's great because those are more people who are coming out because and that are invested in the community and what conventions have to offer. So,
yeah. It's one of those feelings where, when you put on a costume, first of all, you really can't do it if you're a shy person. I mean, I know a lot of shy people say that they do it and then they just feel different because they're not themselves. So that helps them in that sense. But it's one of those things where the point of putting it on is that you're approachable. So right. You're at this convention filled with a couple thousand people and, you're the welcome greeter. Like, you're there to have people come up to you and talk to you and get your picture taken a million times, and that's part of the excitement.
Yep.
So it's, you just have to know what to expect if you've never put on a costume outside of Halloween or Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage everybody to try it. It's fun.
Yeah, and the folks that do it always seem to be having a good time. Yeah, so, and that's, and again, just people having fun and enjoying themselves does a lot for any show, regardless of, the reason for it. If people are happy, then the show's just automatically better. And cosplayers can do that. They make a lot of people happy. Like, oh, man, I know who that is, or I can't believe you mixed those two characters together.
Yeah, there's been a lot of really unusual mashups. Like, the last few years, the mashups, because people don't want to, be caught wearing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Darth Vader is usually mashed up with something. Boba Fett is usually mashed up with something. They're just getting really strange and bizarre. And some of them are just hilarious.
Yeah, and some of them are really thoughtful, too, and, like, they make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Batman Darth Vader was, a popular one somewhere.
That's a pretty good one. At C2E2 this year, I saw, speaking of the video game stuff earlier, I saw Mega Man, but it was Mega Man as a Blue Lantern, which makes perfect sense. Like, of course. Of course Mega Man would be a Blue Lantern. That works. You should do this.
The lanterns are really fun to play with in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out who would be what color and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, those interpretations, they're things that get fans excited, and people really like seeing that because it allows their imagination to run wild with the characters and other ideas that they may have been holding on to themselves. Like, oh, somebody else thought of that. I am validated,
Right.
Sort of thing, so.
All right, well, Zach, before, we let you go. Let's just get some more information. What's the AppleseedCon website?
That is appleseedcon.com.
Well, that's super easy.
It is.
And it's, like I said, it's real easy to find on Kickstarter. It's the official big name is the Appleseed Comics and Art Convention. Are you calling it something clever like C2E2 did? Like, are you AC squared or something?
Nope, just Appleseed for short.
Okay. And that will be May 17th and 18th of next year at the Grand Wayne Convention Center in downtown Fort Wayne. And like I said, it is a really nice town to walk around in, and the convention hall is beautiful. All my friends will be there, so hopefully I will too. all right, so Zach, where should people be following you as well, or do you have specific Appleseed links?
Oh, I got, Amber, I have all the links.
You have all the links.
Okay. I have all the links. Yeah, so if folks want to follow the show on Twitter, just for updates about it and about the convention or guest announcements, that sort of thing, that you can follow the show at AppleseedCon on Twitter. Or if you want to follow me, that I'm at Zach Kruse, and that's ZACKKRUSE. And if you want to check out Mystery Solved, the webcomic, once it starts, once it kicks back up again, hopefully this, as you're listening to this, you can find that at MysterySolvedComic.com.
That's awesome. I can't wait till, you know, till you're well-rested and get back into the swing of things. But, it's helpful to take a break. Like you said, Guns of Shadow Valley had a good Kickstarter, and they took a break for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But that's because Dave's all famous now. He had to, like, go, like, you know, work on IDW books and stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm Dave. I have all these great comics. Blah, blah, blah.
He's busy being famous.
Yeah. It makes you sick.
It does.
Success.
But it's great. Now Guns is back, so we're happy. Yep. We're all happy that Guns is back.
Yep. Everybody is. It's a good thing.
And, all right. Well, you got a couple weeks left on the Kickstarter, so of course I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, and thank you again for having me on. It's nice to talk to you, so...
You guys, you can follow me, of course, at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter, or just head over to AmberUnmasked.com. It's Amber Unmasked on Facebook and Google+. And I'm pretty much everywhere as often as possible. So thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks to Zach and all of his hard workers at Appleseed for putting on such a great show.